I was thinking yesterday, about the time I worked in Las Vegas for 3 years, and I toughed it out for just about 3 years, and I finally had to. I couldn't take the heat. And now here it is in Oregon, and we've been over 100 and high 90s for weeks, and we haven't even gotten to the hottest month of the year yet. That's August, so it's been... I didn't sign up for living in the desert again, but it's like the desert here. How hot's it been down there, Johnny?
It's so interesting that we start off that conversation like that because, you know, eons and eons ago.
Yes.
Eons and eons ago, God was dissatisfied with the humans that he created. Mm-hmm. So he sent a flood to drown us all, but it didn't work. So this time what he's decided to do is barbecue us.
All true. All true.
But, you know, God. In hell, with Satan trying to get some of his wards who were unruly, getting them to settle down, he is saying, listen, if you don't settle down, I'm going to send you to Las Vegas. You know, if this keeps up for another 2 years, Jeff, you won't see any white people outside.
That's funny.
They will all be funny. In tunnels, living like the Vietnamese when they beat the Americans. That's the only place you'll find white people. It is so brutal. And what people do not realize that the heat harms your immune system. And if you are taking medications and are in that kind of heat, they won't work.
And now that's an interesting thing that very few people talk about.
Well, because nobody knows it, but I'm a living example of it. And, you know, I don't like to talk about, I never talk about my ailments or anything like that. I only like to talk about positive things or funny things, creative things, purposeful things, political things that are meaningful, but there are very few of those to talk about.
Yes.
But I'm a living example. You know, I am a type 2 diabetic. And my blood sugar every day is between 95 and like 110, which is like I'm not a diabetic at all. And I take a thing called glipizide or metformin or something like that. And evidently it works really well. Anyway, two Wednesdays in a row, I have a dear, dear friend who was in charge of all gambling payouts for the MGM casinos. He is a fellow who thinks my book, Your Mother's Not a Virgin, is the greatest book he has ever read. And he has bought about 18 for his family.
That's nice.
But he has bought about 200 or 300 for gamblers who lose over $10,000. He gives them the book and says, hey, read this on the way home. It's the best book that you have ever read. Well, and I think I told you this story about his grandson. His grandson's name, Ethan. And 2 years ago when he was 11, he could barely speak. He was at the bottom of the class. Didn't I tell you that story?
I don't think so. Maybe when you start telling it, I'll remember. Wait, but go ahead if you want.
Tommy, like me, is a golfer. You know, Rudyard Kipling said, mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the noonday sun. Kipling didn't know any golfers. And every Wednesday, Tommy and I lived to play golf because that's his one day off, you know.
Right.
And about 2 years ago, he wanted to get his son, Ethan, into something that his son would... well, grandson would enjoy. Mm-hmm. And he asked me if he'd bring him along to play golf. And I said, okay, absolutely, because, you know, I did spend years with my son doing that. And, and then he told me the story about he can't speak well, and he's at the bottom of his class. And I said, well, in that case, you have him ride with me. He said, why? I said, you have him ride with me. I'll show you what. So Ethan rode with me. And the reason he enjoyed riding with me, he liked the Superman shirt that I wore.
Ah,
so
yes.
I came with a Superman shirt for him. And his eyes just lit up. And we did play a little golf. But for the 18 holes, he and I did nothing but talk. And he was just as lucid as anyone. So when it was over, I went to Tommy. I said, Tommy, there's nothing wrong with your grandson. He could be a genius, for God's sake, because Einstein didn't speak until he was 8. Mm-hmm. And so I would suggest you get him out of that environment and into some other kind of environment, because kids are starting to tease him. So Tommy paid $25,000 to put him in a different environment. That was 2 years ago. He is now the top student in his class at 13 years of age, and did so well. Tommy rewarded him by sending him last month to Italy and to Greece, where all his founding fathers are from. But anyway, back to the business of the heat. I take this medicine.
Can you imagine, John, excuse me, if Kipling had ever been taken on a tour of Las Vegas at noon in July? Think about it.
Oh, my God. His elephant,
he wouldn't believe it.
His elephant would have stomped on him, for God's sake. But in any event, what happened is that every morning I take my blood sugar. And I eat a Mediterranean diet. I eat a lot of salmon, a lot of fish, a lot of salads, a lot of stuff in olive oil. And I went from the high of 110 to 250. 250, my blood sugar. And So for 3 days, I almost fasted to try to get it down. And it stayed at 250. So I thought, you know what? Because I have an important story to tell you coming up, I'm leaving town on Sunday. And I can't leave town with blood sugar at 250. So I took myself to the emergency, found a fantastic doctor, and he explained the whole thing to me. And I said, listen, this happened to me once 5 years ago. Just give me an insulin shot. So he gave me an insulin shot, and it came down. And he said, listen, stay out of the sun if you take any kind of medications. And even if you're healthy, stay out, because it's going to destroy your immune system. So there you go.
Oh, anyway. Interesting. Yeah. All right.
So now to the business of
250, that must have freaked you out.
Yeah, because, you know, I thought 10 years ago I deserved to be dead because of my high blood sugar. And I still played golf. And on the fifth hole at the Legacy Golf Course where I lived, I took a swing at the club, and there was a loud crack, and I fell on the ground. And my three buddies thought I had died. So it was that old joke, hit the ball and drag Johnny. I got on a cart, got myself home. For 8 months, I floated 6 hours a day in a bathtub to defy gravity, and I found Siegfried and Roy's doctors, the guys who, got his head chewed, right? And I was lucky enough to find him. So I went to get a back operation. He said, I can't operate on you. Your blood sugar's too damn high. So I tried for 3 weeks to lower it. I had a hard time lowering it, but I did get it down. And I went back in there. I had a box of matches in my hand. And I got my appointment. He said, is your blood sugar down? And I said, well, check it right now. He said, oh, my God, John, it's on the border. I'm not sure I can do this. And I said, here. And I handed him a box of matches. He says, what on the earth is this for? I said, listen, you either operate or cremate, because I am not going to live like this for the rest of my life. Well, he operated, and I've never felt better in my life. I've never had a backache. My golf swing is better. Everything is better. And every Christmas,
what the hell did he do? What did you do to your back that he fixed?
Those things in the spine between the
vertebra.
Bones.
Vertebra.
Yeah. It broke and it slipped into my sciatic nerve.
Oh.
And cut
horrible.
The nerve.
Oh.
I literally crawled for 8 months. And I'm telling you something. The CIA and the military are just absolute jerks. If they arrest a suspected terrorist, you know, everybody knows they're sticking them in Guantanamo and torturing them in horrible, horrible ways. Just take a goddamn hammer, break his goddamn back, and he'll confess to killing Lincoln.
I didn't know. That was cutting the nerve or impinging on the nerve.
Yes, it was penetrating the sciatic.
Oh, my God.
I should have been dead. You know what? I should have been dead.
Or paralyzed, one or the other.
I wouldn't live paralyzed.
No, I know you wouldn't.
I wouldn't have lived paralyzed. So anyway, the last time I was on with you, did I read my poem about luck?
I think you did, but people love these things, so don't hesitate about doing it again. It's fine.
Well, I will, because the truth is there is good luck and there is bad luck. We all know that.
I concur. There is good and evil. All right, let's go there too.
I was just recently fired. I was just recently the recipient of a bullet of good luck fired right at me, and it didn't hit me in the right ear. It hit me right in the heart. So that's what I want to talk about first, because I know there are a lot of things to talk about. I mean, Biden going and all of the rest of that kind of stuff. And that story that I wrote to you,
I sent to you.
And I've gotten all kinds of, you must have posted it, because I'm getting all kinds of notes from people about this.
It's under your name on the left side of the page in your columnist section. It's the top story. It's entitled M&M's and Superman.
Oh, that is just adorable. Because
and
I said,
formatted the whole thing for you. It's all cleaned up. It looks great. I sent it to you as well.
Anyway, have you ever heard of a fellow named Andrew Craig?
Yes. I can't remember where, though.
Well, Andrew Craig was the co-founder of CAPA, C-A-P-A, Citizens Against Political Assassinations, along with Dr. Cyril Wett.
Three years ago,
Oliver Stone was a feature speaker there. 2 years ago, I was a feature speaker. This year, it's one of my close friends, Steve Jaffe, who is the last living Jim Garrison investigator. Anyway, Andrew is also the co-founder of one of the greatest film festivals in America, and it's called the Whistleblowers Film Festival in Washington, D.C. So we're going to put that on pause for just a second. Because I think, even with a Cannes Film Festival, they're all Ponzi schemes and money-making scams, because there are millions of people around the world who make small films and large films and want them to be seen by a larger audience. So they create these film festivals. But it costs $150 to get in a modestly good festival, plus you have to run off a copy of your film. Mm-hmm. When I made the American media in the second assassination of President John F. Kennedy, the absolute definitive film on Jim Garrison's solved but sabotage case in the murder of John Kennedy, I entered Film Festival 5 years ago. Do you know how many thousands of dollars that cost me? Now, first of all, I'm heartbroken because Toronto doesn't accept it, Vancouver, Montreal. So I thought, well, at least New Orleans, where Jim lived, or San Francisco, which is more progressive.
You were rejected in all of those major festivals.
Yes, but I was rejected in silence. Not one wrote to me. And I also re-entered the San Sebastian Film Festival, or tried to, because in 1992, my first one, The Garrison Tapes, was voted the best film made that year. So I thought.
But don't tell me they kept your money, John.
Yeah, they. Well, certainly they kept my money. They don't send refund. But then, so pissed off, I thought, well, I know I'll get even with these people and America. I'll send it to Moscow. So I sent it to Moscow, and I was getting ready to make reservations and go there to the Moscow Film Festival. Right. They were the only outfit that replied in the negative with an apology. The only outfit. Not one in Canada. Not one in Australia.
That's a remarkable little vignette right there.
Yeah, and you know what? That's like $10,000 down the drain that I don't have. So that being said, about 4 months ago, does the name William Pepper mean anything to you?
I looked at it. I looked at the production, the documentary. It's brilliant.
Oh, yes. Well, thank you. So now we have
it's brilliant.
I called it. I called it the greatest piece of investigative journalism in America in 75 years. And the reason I called it that, Jeff, because nobody I know who should know knew who William Pepper was. Maybe Donald Jeffries and a couple of other really smart people. So that's right. Why I called it that. And I thought it would attract an audience.
Right.
And one of the people that attracted was Andrew Craig.
Mm-hmm.
So Andrew called me. He says, now let me tell you something. Oh, yeah. Okay. So when I made the film, I had an 8-year-old recorded our conversations with William Pepper. That's mm-hmm. all I had. So I thought, you know, he was like Jim Garrison. I made his documentary when he was on his deathbed, and now I couldn't talk to William Pepper because he's on his deathbed. So I get the 2 hours, I boil it down to 90 minutes, and it's like a radio show. But what a compelling radio show, because he spoke so well. Leno Sanek, who does Black Op Radio, is one of the greatest guitar players I ever heard and one of the greatest editors I ever heard. So I called him in Vancouver. And I said, listen, I'll give you $600 if you will look at this hour and a half and see if you find a picture every couple of seconds to put up. He turned it in to what you saw. The visuals you saw, Jeff, made it a movie. I mean, it's just brilliant.
Oh, it had you. Highest possible commendations for that work. It kept me literally on the front edge of my chair at the desk watching it, totally engrossing, completely engaging, and I see what you're saying. I got it.
So Andrew calls me, and he said, how would you like to enter your film in the Whistleblowers Film Contest? I said, no, don't talk to me about it. Listen, then I told him the story I just told you. He said, well, listen, I'm one of the co-creators. And I'm telling you, this is one of the most brilliant things I've ever seen. And me and my partner and everybody's seen it, said it's got to be in the film festival. I said, I wouldn't give you a nickel to be in any film festival as much as I admire and love you. And so he said, please, let us put it in the film festival. So he puts it into the film festival. And here's what happens, is that William Pepper, like Jim Garrison, got to see it the day before he died. And his wife said to me and Len, my husband didn't say much when he died, but he died with a smile on his face because of the joke that Mr. Barber made at the top about Jim Garrison, Abraham Lincoln, and William Pepper. Now, when Pepper died, Byron Allen, with whom I worked with on Real People, who is now worth $800 million because he makes shows that are popcorn for the brain. Mm-hmm. He's smart enough to be able to do that. Sent $20,000 to Andrew to make sure that Mr. Pepper got a decent burial. So that all being said, he booked it, he said, in the place where it deserved to be, the place where John Kennedy gave his last great peace speech before they blew his brains out, and that is Washington, D.C.
Right.
So I am leaving Sunday morning, arriving there in Washington, D.C. on Monday, and on Tuesday at 1 o'clock, they are screening it, or premiering it, as they call it, at American University, where I will speak where John Kennedy spoke.
That's wonderful.
I am so thrilled.
You've earned it though, John. John, you've earned it. This is something. There are many things that should be coming your way like this. This is extraordinary. You're going back, and people will be able to see you. Anybody who's within a reach of the venue,
can come see you. You have a vast audience because I get notes from people all the time. And I must say, when I posted that story about the M&Ms, I must have gotten a dozen notes saying, please tell that story on Rents on Friday when you're on with them again. Anyway, nice. I know there's that was a stroke of luck for me because I wasn't looking for it. And it just happened. So just in case, I have a couple of really adorable poems to write for you, to read to you. One is about the business of Biden leaving office. And then I have one of the best jokes. I hate to say this because it's so obvious, but it's one of the best, most thoughtful political jokes I ever wrote, which I will get to in a minute. So can I do this little thing about luck first?
Please do. I'm ready. We're all ready.
Yeah. Okay. As you all know, I said I need to stop posting on Facebook to get a needed rest. But things are so screwed up in America now, I must post and rhyme again to get this off my chest. For centuries, mankind has endlessly prayed to a God for an endless peace. But what do we get as a result? Still endless wars that never, ever cease. The truth should certainly lead a reasoning person to conclude no God does exist. But being insecure humans in search for meaning in the unknowable universe, we do persist. There is the law of gravity and scores of others scientific that we humans cannot duck. But there is one mystery that from out of nowhere does hit us all, and that is the laws of luck. Woody Allen said more than talent, it was good luck that helped his filming every single day. In France, the last film he made is about luck because balancing it, good or bad, is nature's way. I certainly have had my share of both. Had we all, but most happily, very good. But in watching Trump from birth till now, his being totally encased in just good luck, I have never understood. He escaped bankruptcies, lawsuits, lying, infidelities, criminal convictions, name it, shit that never ends. 'Tis not only a shield around him, but a mysterious force field that brings nothing but bad luck. to his closest, dearest friends. Michael Cohen, Rudy Giuliani, Steve Bannon, Peter Navarro, and others going broke to jail, lives and careers, now a living hell. And now Trump again, nicked only in the ear, losing his shoes, raising his hand to again ring that good luck bell. It is almost laughable what luck and the fates have brought us. But what scares me more, if he becomes president of these United States, if what I have described is actually true, which is indeed I ever try to speak, if that happens, nothing but bad luck will be one of America's deserved fates. So,
well done. Another classic. They're all good. All
okay.
good.
So now...
here's just a quick question. I don't want you to spend much time on it. When you're writing these things, some people, some great writers, and you are a great writer, feel that some of the material that comes to them is, we'll say, channeled. It comes from the divine, it comes from the universe, it comes from outside, from within. Does your material come from a variety of sources, like from within, from without? Where does it come from? Is it your consciousness that's playing games? What is it?
I have mentioned this to you a few times, and often I think I'm channeling either Mark Twain or William Shakespeare. Now, that sounds a little arrogant, quite honestly. But, you know, I get the... I feel comfortable saying that because by far the greatest genius in the entire universe, you put Michelangelo and Einstein together, they do not come close to Nikola Tesla. Nikola Tesla said he never, ever invented anything. He said he would sit down in the dark. Mm-hmm. And he would think about what it is that he was thinking about. And like out of the universe, a picture would appear, a totally complete picture of what it was he was thinking about. Then he would take his pencil and, like a stenographer, write it down. Now, he was not a believer in God, but he was a believer in some kind of divinity. And he said, I was just being a secretary to the magical things the divine was sending to me. Isn't that beautifully said?
Yeah, that's nicely said. Perfect. Yeah. Okay. All right. Go ahead. We don't have hours here. I wish we did, but please continue. That was excellent.
Thank you. I want to get... hang on a second here. This thing is about... I was just saying, as a former film critic, somebody asked me, what am I thinking of when I look at what's going on? And I said, well, when I look at Donald Trump, I think of Burt Lancaster and Elmer Gantry. And then when I look at Biden, I think of the Invisible Man.
So, that's good. He reappeared today on the White House portico, and he was about 3 inches taller.
When you say he reappeared, so it was like he was a ghost, for crying out loud.
Well, it's one of his body doubles, and the guy's a lot taller. He had a full latex head mask on. He was about 30 feet from the camera, so you can get away with anything now.
Okay, first off.
Go ahead.
Okay, I just said here, you know, the most meaningless word in the English language is if. So if you are living your life with that word uppermost in your mind, you are not living at all. So anyway, way to go. As someone is struggling, oh God, I'm looking at this. It's not busy. Oh, it's not at the end of a busy day going to bed and sleeping that I look forward to. It's getting up early in the morning the next day with the sun to rise to live my dream anew. There you go.
Nice.
There you go. Okay, now, here is the Biden poem, okay? And then I'm going to read something else.
Right.
What I think is one of my best jokes, terrible thing to say, but it's so Mark Twain. Joe Biden has dropped out of the uninspiring presidential race. So what is it that we all now do most certainly face? To me, neither candidate is worthy of the presidency of this amazing USA. And there hasn't been one on the horizon since they blew away JFK. If Biden had stayed in the contest, sadly, the issue would be all about Joe. Now with him gone, hopefully, we can get to issues about the America we all love and know. So,
or you could get to the issues about the hoe.
That's funny. That's funny. Okay, where is
Ho it? Ho Harris. Okay.
Huh?
Ho Harris.
You know, have you ever heard that song? I know because you love music. From South Pacific, You've Got to Learn to Hate. Do you
remember
that?
I have to think about that one. That doesn't pop up in my head, but I know it's there.
Yeah, you know what? It's a magnificent, magnificent anti-war song. Mm-hmm. It's from South Pacific. It says, you've got to be taught to hate. And I posted it the other day because since they closed South Pacific, no one has ever heard that song again. It has never been played anywhere.
That's too good. Yeah, that might have been the hidden message in the whole damn musical.
Yeah. Okay. Now I got God Almighty.
You want to do the M&Ms now, John? So we definitely get it all in.
You know what? Okay. Do you think I have time to do it?
Yes. You start now.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Let me hang on a second. I'll get right to it. Here we go. Okay. Basically, what I was going to say in a long joke form was you had Harris, who was a prosecutor, as a Democratic nominee, and you had Trump, who was a Republican nominee, who is a convicted felon 34 times, okay? So with that in mind, it is quite obvious that Donald Trump is not looking forward to taking the Oval Office soon. What he is planning on now is his next January 6th riot. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see if we can get to M&Ms here. Oh, my God. You should read it. You have a better voice than I do, for God's sake. You think
I'll
we
read
do
it if you if I, I'll read it and I'll stop and you can comment. We can do that
if you want. Do you mind if I read it?
Please do. It's yours. I don't want to. But if you know, I'm here to help. You read it, please.
Okay.
And I did send you the script. It's on my site. It's under John's name on the left-hand side of the page. Go ahead, Johnny. Please.
Okay. Thank you so much, Jeff. I have about as much confidence going to doctors in Las Vegas as I do in flying Boeing. I have had out of 11 doctors in the 20 years I've been in Las Vegas, only three who deserve to be doctors. Four retired, which saved a lot of lives. Three
Amen.
Were fired, which saved the lives of me and my wife, Sarita. About 12 years ago, my wife was feeling seriously exhausted all the time. Whatever pills our doctor was giving her did no good. He thought what she needed was a vigorous exercise program, and he had just the outfit gym for her to go to every day, one where Humana insurance would cover the cost. I asked my wife if he gave her any kind of blood tests or other tests to see if jumping on a trampoline is what she really needed. She said he had not. He just kept repeating insurance would cover it. I said, well, you're not going until you take some tests. So I took her to the emergency hospital where a very quick series of tests discovered she had a urinary tract infection. They recommended antibiotics, which cured her in a week. So I recommended we get rid of this Dr. Doolittle and find somebody else. The internet was filled with hundreds of doctors who said they had openings for new patients. I chose one on Tropicana because it was next to a hospital in case he turned about to be as incompetent as our previous one, who shortly after thereafter retired. He had made so much money he could build a mansion on Devil's Island. The new one on Tropicana was on the second floor of a very modern building. His office was close to the elevator, which was convenient. When I walked into his waiting room, I was a bit overwhelmed. It wasn't very big, but it was quite beautiful, with large framed pictures covering all the walls and covering what looked like all 25 seats were asses of patients. I am always early for everything. I got there especially early because I had to fill out all the forms. But this looks like no matter how quickly I filled out these forms, there was no chance that I would get to meet my new doctor as scheduled. By the way, once when Sarita and I were living in Toluca Lake and I was doing Real People, NBC sent me for a physical as required by our contract. I got so pissed that I and a few other people I could see had waited over an hour when I was called in, and the nurse asked me to hand her all the forms. I did, plus a bill for $5,000, because my time was more valuable than his. By the way, I never did get paid. Anyway.
That's a wonderful little kicker right there. That's the way it should be. These people are just awful, a lot of them. Great job.
Anyway, back to the new doctor. After filling out the forms, I didn't want to sit because actually there was no place to sit except the floor. I simply decided to leave. As I was backing out, I noticed a rather really well-dressed woman, perhaps in her early 30s, sitting in the middle seat of about 12 people. On her lap, she was holding what looked like a large, clear plastic bag full of M&M peanuts. I couldn't resist, so I asked, "Pardon me, ma'am, what are they, M&M peanuts?" The people around her laughed, but she did not. She almost looked frightened, and I just said, "No." I said quickly, "What on earth are they?" She said, "Pills." I almost shouted, "Pills? What for?" She paused, then quietly, "My illnesses." I was starting to feel angry, thinking about profiteering doctors and murderous pharmaceutical giants, and said, "Lady, anybody who has that many illnesses is either in a cemetery or a hospital and not sitting in a doctor's chair." Again, the people around her laughed. She got more silent. For some reason, I couldn't stop myself. I continued, "Do you carry that plastic around to save all the different pills that all the different doctors give you for all your different maladies?" The whole room suddenly got quiet. I could sense they thought it was out of line. I began to think so too, but I kept going, getting more out of line. I stepped forward closer to her, reached down, and grabbed the bag that she made no attempt to hold on to, and said, "Did you get these from this doctor?" She nodded in the affirmative. This certainly was not going to be my new primary physician. The bag still in my hand, I said, "You are a very beautiful young woman, and I'm telling you, you do not need to see a doctor, especially this guy. What you need to see is a dietitian. Your body needs nutrients, natural nutrients, and not artificial chemicals." A few on the far side of the room applauded. I did not stay to take a bow. As quickly as I could, I rushed out, pushed the elevator button, and descended to the first floor, her plastic bag still in my hand. I didn't know quite what to do. I was too embarrassed to go back upstairs and apologize, so I just rushed to my car and on the way dumped a plastic bag into a trash can. For days and days, I wondered if I had deprived her of a few really important pills that she needed to save her life. Maybe I killed her. I felt like a monumental asshole. Before the year was over, though, I'd forgotten all about it. I was deep in work and deep in trying to cure my own diabetes. Once in a while, I did think about her and felt I could have been a little kind to her and not and act like a know-it-all asshole comic. Anyway, that was 8 to 10 years ago. Sarita and I have both two new doctors now, both keeping us very healthy as we keep ourselves. Once a week, to break the monotony of my eating my own cooking, which is really pretty good, I go to one of two restaurants in the Strip. One is a sports bar called Steiner's at Windmill and Blue Diamond. Here I order the same dish, 3 great lamb chops, a giant grape salad, and a glass of Cabernet, all for $24 plus a $10 tip. The other is Outback on the Strip, where I also ordered the same thing, the small filet mignon, baked potato, and a small salad, and a glass of Cabernet. The filet is all right, but the baked potato and the salad are fantastic, and it's also only around $35 with a $10 tip. I always sit in the same place, a small dark booth by the bar, because in the darkness it's easier to read my phone. Last Thursday night, about 5 p.m., that's where I was, reading my phone, like everyone else in the place. Soon I stopped reading because I felt someone was staring at me. I looked up to my left, and I was right. Someone was staring at me. A very attractive, really smartly dressed woman with a very expensive Gucci purse. I looked up till we made eye contact, and she remained silent for what seemed a minute or two. Then she said quietly, "Sir, do you mind if I ask you a question?" I said, "My cell number is 702. she chuckled a sweet, warm chuckle, and just as softly said, "Seriously, sir, could I ask you a question?" I said, "Yes, I'm married." A huge smile crossed her face. "It has to be you." I was stunned and chuckled. "What do you mean it has to be me?" Quickly, she said, "Funny pain in the ass." Just as quickly, I responded, "Where did you hopefully see me being funny and not a pain in the ass unless it was about something political?" She said with a glint in her eye, a glint that said she had the right guy. "At a doctor's office in Tropicana 10 years ago. I screamed, "Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You're kidding and you're kidding. Oh, my God. You look fantastic." A huge smile crossed that beautiful face, making her so much more beautiful. And I said, "Did you find a doctor who prescribed only M&M peanuts for you?" She chuckled and grabbed my hand. "What's your name?" I said, "John, or Johnny to some." She said, "I'm Elizabeth, Liz to my friends." I said, "Well, I'll just call you Elizabeth, but you certainly look like a queen." "Thank you," she said. "Johnny, your face did look familiar. So you aged well. But why is a grown man, do you wear a Superman shirt?" I answered, "Because from the time my son was a child, it was his favorite character. And while I'm not superstitious, wearing it always brought me luck." "And you remembered it," she said. "Well, I guess I did. And it brought me luck, too, because when you stole like an asshole my medicine, I had no idea what to do with my life. It was more my mood that was making me ill rather than my illness. I was a single mother of two, well off from an inheritance, but the unhappiest woman on the planet. shortly after you left with my M&Ms, she smiled that beautiful smile again. I left too, saying to myself, this spoiled brat better get her shit together because she's no use to either herself or her children. And guess what I did? I was so stunned to answer or to say anything, she continued. I went to a dietitian, then I went to a gym, then after that, to a bank to put my inheritance into a trust for my children, and then got a job. At that job, I met the most amazing man, divorced, with three children. Now I feel like the luckiest, happiest wife and mother of five. I cannot wait to get home to tell my husband that I met that funny, arrogant asshole. For some reason, I found my body trembling while she was still holding my hand. And I said, Elizabeth, I am at a total loss for words. And she said with a big smile, well, Johnny, I guess there's a first time for everything. By the way, what's your last name? I said, Barbour, B-A-R-B-O-U-R, spelled the Scots way, B-A-R-B-O-U-R. And all I can say, Elizabeth, is that you have most certainly made my day, as Clint Eastwood would say. She said, Johnny, you made my life. When I get home, I'm going to tell my family and look you up, because regardless of that children's T-shirt, for some reason, you look familiar to me. She squeezed my hand harder, then let go and just walked off. I had lost my appetite. My food was half eaten. I didn't even want to take it home. I sat there in the darkness for another half hour, pondering and amazed at what had just happened, whispering quietly to myself over and over, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. It was getting dark, time to leave. I asked the waiter for the check. He said, there isn't one. Some beautiful woman paid it for you. The $50 I had in my hand, I put in his hand. I said, oh, thank you. He said, oh, thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. Have a very, very good night. I said, you are getting that $50 because I've just had one of the greatest, most amazing nights in my life. A very good night indeed. That's it.
When John sent that to me and I read it, this happens often, usually, when I read John's writings. I hear his voice reading it to me, and he just did it again. It's exactly what it sounded like when I was reading it. His voice is there reading it. I don't mean to sound melodramatic here, but that's just the way John writes, with his spirit, his soul is right there. Well, it's a beautiful, beautiful story, and it's up on the left-hand side of the homepage. Look for John Barbour. It's right there, M&M's and Superman.
Do you know, Jeff, that six people said the exact same thing you did? You know, because people don't read much more than a tweet now. Right. And yet they said from the very first few sentences they were captured. And say with it, because they felt like I was talking to them. Well, Jeff, the truth is, I write the way I talk. And when I talk, it's like I'm talking to myself, and I don't want to bore myself. So I get quickly to the point. That's why, like Hemingway, a lot of my sentences are only three words long.
Right, right. It's true. The best writing I've ever done is just conversation. I'm just
absolutely
speaking.
You just
nailed it. Yeah.
But you're an amazing, amazing speaker, because you just have an amazing, captivating voice. It's always peaceful, even if you're talking about something terrible, and you have a lot of things terrible that you talk about.
Yeah, there sure are.
It's almost a sound of comfort in it. You know, very few people that.
Well, I can pass the compliment right back to you. Whoever hears you, doing these is very lucky and very fortunate. And I'll put this program up under John's name as well, so if you'd like to hear him read this masterpiece, you can, anytime you'd like. Johnny, thank you, my friend. That was just wonderful.
And
couldn't get any better.
I will call you maybe late on Tuesday after the screening in Washington.
Good.
Just to let you know how it went.
Good. Please do. All right. Have a wonderful time and take care.
Thank you. Thank
Say
you,
goodnight
Jeff.
To good. Sarita. Okay.
You're the best. Good night, Gracie.
Right. Yes. Good night, George. Okay. All right. That's our program tonight. What a man. What a wonderful human being. We will be back Monday. Have a good weekend. Have a safe weekend. And thank you for being here.